And away we go on this Wednesday, middle of the week, April 24th. What a beautiful day it is here in Ohio. What a beautiful week it's been, and what a beautiful week it will be. 15 minutes past the hour, you're tuned into the Now program, and this is going to be an hour as interestingly enough, or as oddly enough as it may be to say, this is an hour that could save your life, because in my opinion, the most important muscle in your body is the heart muscle. And from what I hear and what I read in all the medical journals all around the world is that the number one killer, the number one cause of problems with your heart is stress, something we deal with and control every day. That is going to be the discussion today, how to live a long, healthy life when it concerns your heart and the number one issue with your heart, stress. Now again, is that all true? I don't know. That's what I hear. I'm not a doctor, but our guest today is a doctor. A matter of fact, he's one of my favorite people, one of my favorite doctors, one of the nicest men you will ever meet. We haven't had him on in about 4 months. Now that is something that gives me a lot of stress that could cause heart issues. But he's back today, and I'm so glad he's back today. You probably remember him best as the doctor on the Today Show. That's where I remember him so many mornings, getting up, seeing him with Bryant Gumbel and Katie Couric and the myriad of people on the Today Show. Or maybe you've read one of his best-selling books, From Losing Weight to Stress. He's written a lot of them, currently working on another new book that hopefully will be released very soon, and we can have him on to talk about that. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones Dr. Art Uhlein. Doctor, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. The pleasure is all mine.
Doctor, when I make that statement that stress is the number one cause of heart issues, is that a correct statement to make?
I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest. We know that it is a significant contributor. I don't think it's been possible to say precisely how much of the problem is due to stress, how much is due to inactivity or sedentary lifestyles, how much is due to high cholesterol levels. I mean, there are so many different contributors to this. But I will tell you that if you ask a family physician, that's the doctor who is really on the front lines dealing with the everyday issues of people, the doctor I talk to tell me that somewhere between 50 and 75-80% of all the problems they see in their office on a day-to-day basis are related to stress. Some of those problems are related to the heart and the cardiovascular system, the high blood pressure. They see patients with heart disease, and there's no question stress is playing a part in that. But they also are dealing with patients who are complaining of headaches, of gastric problems, of back pain, of difficulty sleeping. I mean, the list is just incredibly long of problems that are related to stress. People talk about dizziness, wheezing, pelvic pain, muscle spasms. I mean, it goes on and on. And a fair question, and maybe it's where we should start, Scott, is how in the world does stress cause all these problems? That's kind of where I'd like to start if we could.
I think so. You know, it's interesting. All the shows we've done over the last close to 5 years now, when I was thinking about this one this morning, I think it's the most important because of all the issues we've talked about medically, from weight loss to Alzheimer's to strokes to all these cancer, myriad of things, there isn't a person listening. There isn't a person who might hear this in a repeat. There isn't a person on the face of the earth who at some point has not had stress.
How true. How true. You should live out here in Los Angeles where I live, and we're just getting in your car is stressful. But I have some good news, by the way. You really can do something about stress, and I hope we've got a little time at the end to talk about that, because I've got some very specific ideas for how no matter where you live, but especially in L.A., how to get rid of stress, how to keep it from undermining your health.
Absolutely. Let's start where we want to start here, which is, why does stress cause these problems?
All right. It's an inborn, physiologic, intrinsic, inescapable mechanism that makes this happen. The stress response, if you want to look at this sort of in an evolutionary sense, goes way, way, way back to the days when people were out hunting and gathering, and where you needed something to save your life if you were confronted with an immediate peril. Let's say you run into a grizzly bear, right?
Right.
What happens? Well, you know the feeling. Oh, that horrendous feeling. Then suddenly your heart starts pounding, your pupils dilate, you gain strength you never knew you had, you start perspiring, and you run. And what that is that is a physiologic, autonomic, automatic response to a threat to your life. And the response gives you everything you need to get away. You have adrenaline pouring out. It raises your heart rate, which gives you more blood to get to your muscles. It raises your blood pressure, which makes sure that the blood gets everywhere. It starts you breathing more rapidly. I mean, everything is designed to escape danger, okay? And that was real. That was a real danger, and it gave you the physical capacity to get away. Here's the problem. The problem is that you don't have to be in real danger to have that response. If your mind imagines that you're in danger, it triggers the same response. Now, how can I make that claim? Well, let me take you back a minute. Try to recall the last time you were in a terrifying movie. You're in a movie theater. It's dark. You're watching some well-done production, and the hero is about to get shot or is in critical danger. And what happens? You're on the edge of your seat. Your heart is beating faster. You may even start perspiring in the movie. I mean, you feel every single bit of physical fear you would feel as if you were in front of a real grizzly bear. It's just a picture. Hey, it's a movie. It's not real. But if your mind gets into the mode and presents a picture of a threat to your body reacts in exactly the same fashion. Maybe not with the same intensity as if you had to escape real danger, but it happens. So your blood pressure goes up, your heart starts racing, adrenaline is pouring into the system, adrenal steroid hormones are pouring in, all the things you need to manage stress. Now, if it only happened during a movie, once a month, you know, once a week even, it's no big deal. You get past the scene and everything goes back and you've had 3 minutes of exposure. But if you live in Los Angeles, where I do, and you've got the pressure and tension of everyday life, you get out in the car and someone runs a red light, and what happens? You want to swear at the guy. You feel every muscle in your body tense up. My blood pressure goes up, my pulse goes up, and it goes on all day long. You go to work in a job you don't like. You're having an argument with your wife. You're looking at the bills coming in, and you're asking yourself, how am I going to pay these bills? And the same response gets triggered as if you were in true immediate danger. So now you're living with this response all day long, 12, 16, 18 hours a day. That's what takes the toll on your health.
What is happening in your body that's causing the most damage when that's going on during those waking hours?
Well, there are so many things going on. Let me try to describe a few of the principal ones. And the interesting thing about it is we may each react differently to it. So, for example, I said adrenaline starts pouring out. Your heart starts pounding, goes up. My heart may go up to 80, 90, 100 beats a minute. My resting rate is 50. Hey, that's really fast for me. I can literally feel my heart beating. I start breathing faster, and I get the sensation, I'm running short of breath. Every muscle in my body tenses up. This is normal, right? When you get angry, when you get tense, when you're stressed. So steroid hormones start pouring out. It affects your digestion and the way your intestinal tracts feel. I mean, literally, all of these different things happen. So I may get a headache. You may get back pain. You may get a spasm in your back. The fellow next to you may end up having to run to the bathroom with diarrhea. We all have our own, I call them target organs. And the family doctor sits there, and patient after patient comes in with these symptoms. Test after test gets done. There's nothing they find. And these are the cases, almost always, that are the result of chronic life stress.
Doctor, if somebody dropped dead today and an autopsy was done, would anybody, any coroner in this country, be able to go in and say stress caused that?
No. Let's say this person had lifelong hypertension, high blood pressure, in part as a result of stress. And this person had high blood cholesterol as well. And the person was sedentary, really sedentary, which takes a terrible role on heart health. The chances are the pathologist, the coroner, would look and say, oh, look, this person had atherosclerosis, probably high blood cholesterol, or hypertension, chronic hypertension caused his arteries to harden, and that caused them to become rigid and thick and to narrow down, and so he had a heart attack because he didn't get enough blood flow. And no one would ever pay attention to the fact that this person lived struggling to pay his bills, in an unhappy marriage, going to work every day in a job he hated, and struggling for an hour each way to work and back home in traffic that drove him crazy.
Mm. You know, it's interesting, because this is so interesting to me, because the two mantras that I often say in my head when something bad is going on, no matter what it is, I say, this too shall pass, because I believe everything does, everything. And then the other thing is, everything comes to an end, no matter what it is.
Right.
So
those are wonderful. And by the way, they illustrate something that I talked about at the beginning, which is that a picture in your mind can create the same kind of response as the stress response. That's the bad news. The bad news is if you just think it's going to be an awful day, you are going to be triggering a lot of stressful responses. Here's the good news. The good news is that if you plant a beautiful, calming, hopeful, optimistic picture in your mind, which is what you do when you say, this too shall pass, exactly the opposite thing happens. It calms your body. It lowers your blood pressure. It slows your heart rate. It relaxes your muscles. So I do the same kind of thing you do, Scott. I have my own little trick. I say, take a deep breath. And I go, and it calms me. I say to myself, pause, pause. And I repeat it 3 or 4 times. And I've done it so many times that it triggers a calming, relaxing response. Herbert Benson talked about this way, way back when he talked about meditation, the so-called relaxation response. So the good news is that although we plant these bad pictures in our mind, and a thought, by the way, is a mental picture. When you think to yourself, oh my God, I got another awful day at the office today, you have planted a stress-producing mental picture. So one way to combat this is to change the picture. Literally, change the picture in your mind. I do this when I find, recognize, and this is a big problem, most of us don't even know what's happening to us, but I'm really tuned into this. So when if I feel my muscles getting a little tense, I say, where shall I go? And I take myself, I close my eyes, not when I'm driving. I close my eyes, but I'll pull over to the side of the road sometimes and do this. Close my eyes and put myself into Cane Garden Bay, British Virgin Islands, Tortola Island, the most beautiful place I have ever been in the world. And I make a picture in my mind's eye of sitting on the beach in Cane Garden Bay and just saying those words, Scott, is relaxing me right now. You can probably hear it in my voice, right? I have so trained myself to become calm when I say the words Cane Garden Bay that I feel better already.
When you look back at your life, what has been the event that caused you the most stress? And how did you deal with it personally?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's a tough one. And I'm going to think about that later on, I got to tell you. The event that has caused my... It's probably losing control. Getting angry. I used to have problems with anger. And I used to resort to the model I learned from my father, who would just explode. I mean, you didn't want to be around my father when he exploded. Thank God he didn't drink. But he really got pretty ugly, and frankly, that was the lesson I learned, you know, when you really get angry about something. He'd get angry over simple things. And I have to admit that I spent a good part of my young adulthood reacting the same way. My poor dear wife paid a price for that. But you...
Are you there, Doctor? Doctor? Uh-oh.
Training, anger management training, that I took to prepare for a Today Show series I was doing with a wonderful psychologist named Hendry Weisinger, I learned to change that response. And so I used to blow up at drivers. You know, I'd get furious at people. Look what he did. He cut me off. How can you do that? I'll get you. I mean, crazy sort of stuff. Now, I have trained myself, again, using these words, to plant a different picture.
One of the observations I've made as of late, Doctor, is that I think the world is maybe not as comforting a place as it once has been. And what I mean to say about that is, I think one of the best things you can do when you are under a stressful situation is talk about it. Get somebody else's opinion. See what's going on. I notice a lot lately that when you tell somebody a problem, their response is, oh my God, what are you going to do? That's not calming. That doesn't help. I think that amplifies it.
Well, sometimes just talking about it with yourself, becoming aware of what's happening, will allow you to short circuit this process. So, for example, I keep coming back to driving in Los Angeles. It has gotten so stressful. So there have been times when I've been at a signal and a car will try to pass on the right. You know how they pull up, and there is no lane on the right when you get through the intersection. And you know this guy's going to gun it and get past you. And I just start getting angry, and I which is crazy. I mean, what's the big deal? Let the guy get ahead of you. So now I have trained myself. I say, be my guest. Guy pulls up on the right. He wants to play the traffic games. I say, be my guest. And I let him go in front of me. And I say to myself afterward, you know something? He's only going to get there 1 second ahead of me. What's the big deal? So, yeah, one way to deal with this stress is to talk to yourself more about it. So ask yourself the simple question, why am I getting so upset about this? Where does this really fit in the whole perspective of things? Let me tell you how I solved my car stress problem. 2 weeks ago, I'm sorry, 2 months ago, literally, March 1st, I got a bill for my next license, $152. I drive a really old car, so the license renewal is $152, and I got a notice that I had to go in for a smog check now. So I drove down to my mechanic's place, and I said, Bobby, I need a smog check so I can renew my license. He said, I can't do it, Doc. This form says you need a star check. What's a star check? Well, it's a special smog check because you've got an old car, and I can't do those. I said, where do I have to go? Oh, you're going to have to go over to Fairfax and Olympic, and they do them there. What's it going to cost me? $60. And I said, I'm not going to do it. I am not going to do this anymore. Bobby, where can I sell my car? He said, I'll buy it. I sold my car on the spot. On the spot. I gave him the keys. He said, come back later today with the pink slip, you know, so I could transfer the title. And for 2 months now, I have gone without a car. I use the buses. What an experience. I haven't ridden a bus in 50 years. I am enjoying a whole new side of Los Angeles. I walk to the gym instead of driving. People say, how could you do that? You walk to the gym? Yeah, it's a mile and a half. People are amazed that a human being would walk a mile and a half. I mean, my life has transformed. I use Uber and Lyft, and I have cut the cost of transportation in half. I can ride a bus for 35 cents. It's a whole new life opened up to me, and my traffic stress is gone.
Now, does the waiting on the bus and having to call the bus, now does that cause stress?
Actually, the buses come every 10, 15 minutes. And what I have learned is instead of viewing that as, I've got to wait 15 minutes for the next bus, I just missed a bus and getting upset. I think, what an opportunity. I have 15 minutes to observe life in Los Angeles. It's how we frame these issues that determines whether or not they're going to be painful and take a toll on our health or not. And keep in mind, I use the word frame. I'm back to this picture analogy, right? If you frame, I'll give you an example. I was talking to a fellow, Scott Eblen, who's a nationally renowned business leadership trainer. And I was complaining to Scott at a meeting we were both at, and I said, Scott, I am so upset. I have to moderate 5 seminars. That's a lot of work. I didn't come to this meeting to work that hard. And he said, wow, you get to moderate 5 seminars? What a lucky guy. They must think highly of you. How you frame it, I don't have to do that. I get to do that. So there are so many different ways of attacking this problem of thoughts, mental pictures, mental images that become stressful by reframing them and turning them into opportunities. I do want to say also, by the way, that a huge amount of stress in our life is avoidable. We make a lot of our own stress. We overschedule ourselves. We overpromise things to people. We make commitments that we know we shouldn't be making. We fill our lives with clutter, with tension. We purchase things we're not going to use and can't afford. A deliberate program of de-stressing would involve carefully thinking about all of these things. It's interesting. My wife and I have been able to reduce our annual living expenses by about 10% just by cutting out things that we really never needed or enjoyed. I cut my cable bill by calling the cable operator and telling him, if you can't reduce my bill by $40 a month, I'm going to cut off cable. He said, I just reduced it $40 a month. I said, what did I give up? He said, nothing. What do you mean nothing? He said, I just gave you a $40 a month discount. Every time I turn around, I find I'm able to somehow reduce my commitments, and that reduces stress.
That's interesting. When I think about things, I would say the number one stressors in life, if you're fired, if somebody dies unexpectedly, if somebody dies expectedly, if you're hit with something you have no control over, how do you deal with that type of stress?
Well, there are two issues here. And one is episodic stress. Some of the things you describe are sort of, they're short-lived. They happen and they are stressful, but they're gone in a few days. You recover from it. That episodic stress is not going to kill you. It's not going to damage your heart. The sense of being out of control on a chronic basis can be catastrophic. There are a lot of scientific studies which show that they actually showed this with that started with animals, that if you have a sense, a feeling that you have no control over your life, that becomes depressing. It leads to depression. It leads to stress. It leads to this chronic stress response that damages your heart or some other part of your body. Now, there are some things, Scott, over which we have no control. We have to work. We have to pay the bills and make a living. However, reframing some of that in your mind and changing some aspects of it can reduce some of this pressure. So, for example, there may be things at work that you can change. You can't just quit your job. You've got a family to support. But there may be some things at work which, if you thought about, you could change. You could talk to your boss. You could talk to your fellow employees. You could change your hours at work. You could to get yourself out of rush traffic. There are so many different ways to deal with these problems. The one thing that won't work is ignoring them. Just staying oblivious to the problem will not stop the damage this stress is doing.
You know, this is interesting because I had a conversation recently when it came to work, because as you say, there are certain unavoidables and work is one of those in life.
Right.
And there are two theories to this that I want to attack here. And we'll start with the first conversation I had. Let's say you work with a group of people and the group of people don't like the decision that one person made. So immediately they get angry, and they say, we've got to get rid of that person. Well, what if that person was the only thing keeping that thing running, that job moving? Now that they're gone, you've got a whole new set of problems.
Right.
So is that just a hair trigger response? Instead of sitting down and say, okay, why did this happen? How can we do this differently next time?
Well, there are two reasons why the latter approach is so much better. One reason is that it's likely to lead to better decisions, isn't it? You're not going to end up haunted by your own dumb, impulsive decision. There's a second reason why it's good, and that is that it gives you an overall sense of control. A feeling of confidence and control that lasts beyond the episode. And when you feel in control, when you feel competent, when you feel comfortable with yourself, what does that do to your physiology? It calms it. It improves it. It puts you in a healthier physical and physiologic state. I just noticed something interesting. It's interesting to me. And I'm curious to see if you caught this. When I talk about stressful things, I talk faster and a little louder. And when I talked about calming yourself and feeling confident and comfortable, I speak more slowly and more softly, don't I?
You do.
Isn't that fascinating? That was automatic. I didn't do that on purpose, Scott. It's just what happens to your body.
You know, it's interesting because they say one of the biggest fears, if not the biggest fear, is public speaking. And I've done a fair share of that. And the thing that dawned on me one day about it is that if, because a lot of people say, well, how do you get up and do that? Because they're petrified of doing it. And one of the things I've noticed is that if you over-prepare, if you think about it, if it's constantly on your mind, you stress out about it for however long you know when it's going to happen until the time you do it, and then once it's over, you can feel that relief as you're walking away from the podium.
Right.
But if you don't prepare, over-prepare, or if you're in a room and somebody just said, hey, could you get up and say a few words? You didn't stress out about that for 2 weeks because you didn't even know it was going to happen. The
right.
same thing happened. You got up in front of a group of people and said something, but it didn't cause the damage.
Right. I used to do a lot of public speaking. I quit it because I hated the travel. It took me away from my wife, my family, and so I stopped doing it. But during the last 3-4 years when I did it, I would hook myself up to something called a pulse oximeter. It's just a little thing you put on your finger, and it measures your pulse. The anesthesiologists use this during surgery to monitor your pulse and your oxygen level. And then I would transmit that from my computer to a screen, big, giant screen. So I'd be sitting there in the audience or off to the side, off stage, as the program was getting organized and people were getting seated, they would see this giant number up there, 60, 70, 80. I'd said my resting pulse is 50. But, you know, when I'm a little nervous, it's 70 or 80. And then the program would start, and the person introducing me, you know, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Art Uhlein. And I'd come walking up, and that number would skyrocket to 110, 120. You could just see the number racing up. And then I would explain to people that what that number represented was my pulse rate. And I would say, watch me bring it down. And I'd close my eyes and put in a picture of King Garden Bay, and I could take it down to 70 in about 60 to 90 seconds. And then I would say, want to see it go back up? And I would close my eyes and put a picture in my mind of a person who was really toxic in my life at that time. And it would go right back up to 90, 95. And then I'd say, I can't take this. It doesn't feel good. Give me a second. And I'd calm it right back down to 70 and go on with my lecture, which was about the effect that stress has on your physiology. And I could demonstrate it right there in real time.
Mm. Well, this kind of brings us, in a way, to the other work question that I had, because this maybe is the bigger work question that I hear people debating all the time. Do you take the job that pays less that you love, or do you take the job that pays more that you're not in love with, that you can't wait for vacations because you can't wait to be out of there?
That is a no-brainer, Scott. Do not take the money. Well, I'll tell you, it goes back to, I remember when we lived in Washington, I was in the Army, I served 2 years, and my wife came to me and said, do we have to leave? I'm so happy here. This has been the best 2 years we've ever had. Why don't you sign up for another year in the Army? And I said, are you crazy? I'm making $11,000 a year. This was in 1970. And my friends are making 30. She says, I didn't marry you for the money. Mm. So I signed up for another year, and it was one of the best years of our life. There is nothing more toxic than a job you don't enjoy, that you don't want to go to, and money will never buy enough pleasures to overcome the toxic effects of that job. I tell people now, I don't collect things anymore. I used to collect things. I used to collect fancy cars and expensive stuff. I collect memories now. I collect experiences. I collect moments. No money in the world can buy that.
This is an interesting point. When you were so visible on the Today Show, when you were writing books that were just immediately going in to the top 10, when all that was going on, and I assume that was probably one of the great financial points of your life, was that the happiest time?
No. Happiest time times of my life were during my training as a resident, medical school, and internship and residency, when our children were born, being born, and I was working insane numbers of hours. Insane. I never worked so hard in my life, but I was feeling productive and doing important things, and I was learning every day, and we were welcoming these wonderful, joyous children into our lives. And the last 10 years of my life, when I have finally learned how to be a good husband and how to enjoy every moment, and I am just reveling in the joy that my children are experiencing and reliving those early years through with my grandchildren.
So that time when you were on the Today Show, when we got to know you so well, when you were writing the book on weight loss that I remember so well, that everybody was talking about all around in the world, how happy and unstressed was Dr. Yulin during those times?
Well, I've never been unhappy. I've never been unhappy. And part of it has been that I've just always... I was just always amazed by the way my life turned out. It was like I was a geek, a kind of a weak geek, and stumbled into some wonderful opportunities. I've lived a fantastic, rewarding life. The Today Show was a lot of work. I flew 6 million miles between 4 million miles between L.A. and New York just to do that show because I wouldn't move to New York. So it was stressful, but it was an extraordinary experience. It's just how you frame it. Gosh, look what I get to do. The things that led me astray, it's so interesting, because one thing that led me astray was money. I just started doing things for money. I went and they say, you know, hey, Dr. Yulin, if you'll come to Rochester in the middle of the night, we'll give you $10,000 to speak. And, oh, wow, $10,000, I'd go there. And I did not enjoy those experiences because I was doing it for the wrong reason.
You know, one of the best bits of advice I've ever heard when it comes to exactly what we're talking about is that if you are at a job that you like and they're paying you okay and somebody comes along and offers you more money, and it sounds so great, and even in your mind you think, well, it'll be better and I'll make more money doing it. The first time you go to that new job and you don't like something, you're going to regret that you left.
Well, you're going to regret it the second time and the third time and the fourth and the fifth. You're going to regret it every single day, and that's when it becomes harmful to your health.
So, to summarize here, Dr. Yulin, if people are stressed, and I know a lot are who are listening right now, for whatever they are stressed about, whether they're big gaping things or small everyday things, what can they do today to help extend their lives and deal with this in the future?
Number one, give it some thought. Identify one single thing in your life that is stressful that you can do something about, whether it's giving up something, getting something, helping someone, cleaning your garage. There is some simple thing, a small act that you can do today. Do one small act every day to address something that is causing stress in your life. And I can promise you in 30 days, you'll feel different.
Mm. Dr. Yulin, before I let you go, we have about a minute left here. How's the book coming?
I, I, I've had a breakthrough on it. I'm working really on an outline, on a very detailed outline. The book is going to be called Ageless, and it has to do with the notion that you need to stop defining your potential and planning your future based on your age, but rather on your dreams. So I tell people I'm 82 years old, but I have the strength of a 40-year-old, the energy of a 30-year-old, the creativity of a 20-year-old. And my wife says that sometimes I act like a 10-year-old.
You know, it's interesting. One of the questions that I hear a lot is, from people who are driven by money, that you need to do this, you need to make more, you need to get this in, you need to get this retirement plan, you're not going to have anything when you get older. And the standard response is, I don't think I'll get older if I did it that way.
Good answer.
Dr. Euline, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, and I hope we talk again soon. You stay well, and onward and upward.
Same to you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Art Euline, you can't go wrong there. Back in 10 minutes. Don't change that dial. Trivia.
So I said to him, you introduced me. No, he says, what are you going to do? I said, well, you're on 11. You used me as he just got back from Europe. He and his wife, Sylvia.